following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive on a gray, wintry, wet day. Hope everybody is staying warm and dry today. It's never really warmed up. I think the rain may be done for a little while, but it has not been a pleasant day.
No, and I think that this is what could
hey,
be on. Oh, hey everybody, I'm back. I still I was here today, gone tomorrow on Monday. But we didn't have a show yesterday, right?
Right.
And so it's otherwise I'd have some explaining to do. But no, it's good to be back from. It was also a little bit chilly up in Farmville, Virginia. Although the Troy Trojans came back from down 23.
Are they still unbeaten?
And no, they lost a game at Kansas State a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, that's
ago,
right.
But
that's
they're off to the best start in program history. 8-1. They beat Missouri, won those two games in Las Vegas. And then, Bill, it was 46-23 at the media timeout in the second quarter. And the Trojans come back and win 86-83 against Longwood. And they're we're looking into it. I think it might be the biggest comeback in women's basketball in a game this season at the D1 level. Like, I think 23 might be the biggest number that a team that has rallied from. So a lot of fun to call that when we got more games coming up this month. But, yeah, hot start for Shanda Rigby and her team.
Auburn last night, the Auburn men at home against NC State. And in a game that, I mean, most of the statistics dominated by Auburn last night. But one which will hurt you and can hurt you badly. Auburn looked really good in everything except turnovers. 13 first half turnovers, 20 turnovers for the ball game.
Wasn't 13 already more than
13 was more than Auburn had in a game.
Yeah, 13 was more than the season high. I recorded a podcast with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. We did our basketball recap and talked a little football and previewed Auburn Arizona. And we're going to talk with Justin in just a moment. But the turnover, Auburn's inability to take care of the ball.
Yeah, and
finish possessions with shot attempts.
Because
right,
when they did, they went down. Auburn shot it extremely well last night. Yeah, they win by 10.
Yeah,
83-70.
Yeah, there's a stat that Stephen Pearl mentioned in the post game, which was NC State had 20 more shot attempts than Auburn did, and usually
not good at all.
Usually, when
especially for a team that plays any offense.
Yeah, usually when your opponent gets 20 more shot attempts, you're in huge trouble, and it usually indicates that you had problems taking care of the ball and finishing possessions. And sometimes that could be you get obliterated on the glass.
Yeah, I was going to say sometimes it indicates offensive rebounding, but Auburn did a good job of keeping NC State off the offensive boards. They had 7 or 8 offensive rebounds.
But Auburn out-rebounded NC State
dominated them by 13, I think, was the final tally.
Pretty significantly, but the fact that, Auburn can continually, especially in the first 30 minutes or so of game action. I mean, the turnovers were keeping NC State's chances alive, and NC State would flurry with a 3-pointer or two.
Well, they had one very impressive run. They had a 13-0 run to come from 12 back to take a 1-point lead.
But how about Keyshawn Hall?
And how about
Kevin? Second game in a row where you're coming away saying, how about Kevin Overton?
Yeah,
because that second half against St. John's was enormous. He was a big part of what Auburn was able to do there. And then to follow it up at home with a game like that.
Career high, 29 last night for KO. So with that said, let's get to the Drive hotline. Welcome in Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, how you doing today?
Hey, buddy.
I'm all right. I'm a little tired. How are y'all?
Okay, well, you've put a few miles in over the last couple of weeks, and getting ready to make another big trip out west, right?
I was about to say I'm about 10 hours away from driving to the airport to go to Arizona. So, it's exciting though. I mean, this is these are super tiring times, kind of like physically. But you know what keeps you going in this stretch, especially as a media member, is just like there's just so much excitement around Auburn football and Auburn men's basketball right now, and people are just eating everything up, and so it makes it tough on the body, but easy on the actual work output. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to keeping it rolling here these next couple weeks.
Yeah, it's I don't know if you thought you would have as busy a last couple of days. You know, maybe a couple of months ago when we got started with football season, if you thought this would be as grueling a stretch. And I guess we've talked a little bit of basketball, but I'd love to get Ferg's thoughts, especially if he can hang with us for a little while.
Absolutely.
In a week where Auburn finds its head coach in football, mm-hmm. and it's not a guy that we were talking a lot about in the weeks leading up to it, although his name did come up. Mm-hmm. Bill likes to mention that I was...
Yeah, you were all over him. I mean, we talked a good bit about South Florida, though after they beat Boise and Florida, you couldn't help but notice what was going on down in Tampa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and he seemed to check a lot of boxes, you know, that other successful coaches in the SEC, you know, had followed a similar path. But let's get your thoughts on not just the decision to hire Alex Golish as the new head coach of Auburn, but also how he's done in his first couple of days on the job.
Yeah. You know, I think Alex Golish has a lot of what Auburn needs right now. I think Auburn has hired a head coach who is hungry, who is going to work his tail off. You know, when I've been talking throughout the week with people who have covered him and have, you know, known him pretty well over the years, from his time at Tennessee to his time at South Florida. And one of the things you kept hearing about Alex Golish is just, dude's a grinder. I mean, he will work really, really hard. And I think that's what it's going to take, right? That's what it's going to take to get Auburn out of this stretch where it's rock bottom in the modern era for this program. You know, you need somebody who's going to give you that kind of fire, that kind of fight. I think he's got a lot of intensity, a lot of energy, and he wants to be here. I think that's the big thing too. He was hungry for an opportunity like this, and now that he's got it, I think he's going to put everything he can into making it work. And so that's. That I think is huge, and I think just stylistically, it's very much what Auburn needs right now. You know, I think the last decade, you've looked at Auburn and not seen an elite offense really at any point. 2017 was the closest, and that was a good offense, pretty good offense. But I look back, and it's like, you know, Auburn hasn't finished in the top 40 in EPA per play on offense since 2017. Alex Golish. 15th in the country right now in South Florida. And then his two seasons at Tennessee, top six in that area, including a number one finish in his second year there. So he's done it in the SEC. He's aggressive. He's got that kind of mindset that I think really works at Auburn. The way he calls plays, the way he runs a team, his aggressive mentality to everything involved with football, it's what Auburn really needs. Because I think if you're at Auburn – you can recruit really well, and you have to, but you're still going to have to do some underdog stuff to work. And I think, you know, I told Dan this earlier today, and I think it rings true throughout. I mean, ask Pat Dye, you know, go back to his era. Look back at the Pat Dye era. Ask Tommy Tuberville. Ask Gus Malzahn. Ask Gene Chizik. Ask him what it takes for a place like Auburn to win championships, and it's being aggressive and making the most of your opportunities and doing some underdog stuff that makes this place can compete with the very best year in and year out. And I think Golish is very familiar with that, specifically coming off of, you know, two back-to-back jobs at Tennessee as an OC and now South Florida as a head coach, where he walked into tough situations and immediately started getting results.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that, Justin. Something else that we were talking about a little earlier today is that he also is, I think, just from the few minutes around him there at the introductory press conference and from other folks that I've talked to, he will demand the respect of his players. He commands the respect mm-hmm. of his players. We've talked about this before. Hugh Freeze, look, he was a player's coach, but I never had the feeling that players feared Hugh Freeze. And you hear that word and you think, well, that's not good. But no, I think there needs to be some of that in there where you know that when he says something, you had better do that or there are going to be some consequences.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that holds up a standard. I think he's got the intensity and the drive to know, like, hey, this is what it takes. This is what it takes to succeed. This is what it takes to be successful. I think, you know, in the end, I think that's where he and DJ Durkin align themselves really well with one another. I think they're both kind of that same mindset. It's going to take a lot of hard work. It's going to take accountability. It's going to take, you know, it's going to take passion and fire. I mean, you get this dude coming out and saying, hey, we want to be the most violent football team on the field every Saturday. We're gonna run the frickin' football. We're gonna, you know, really, you know, create as much chaos as we can on defense. We're gonna do that on special teams as well. I think it's a top down mentality that you gotta have because look, I mean, you know, you can point to a number of things that went wrong in the Hugh Freeze era for Auburn. I think one of the big things is, and we saw it in the way, even in the Iron Bowl, where you saw, you know, Auburn fall short time and time again in winning situations under him, is I think this team just did not have the right mentality, and I think there was some softness to the way they approached things, and that's how they finished games. You know, I don't immediately think it's going to come in and just be like, okay, now Auburn's going to win every close game and everything's going to be great now with a different head coach. But I think you got a guy coming in here and saying, hey, if you're going to be here, you're going to want to be here, and if you're going to be, and if you want to be here, you better be ready to work hard.
Yeah, you know, and I think he also, like, the expectation is that the best players are going to be able to hold the rest of the team accountable too, right? Like, he's going to have the expectation, and you know what? And in an era where you know the NIL money is flowing, and there, you know, there are maybe added responsibilities with being a college football player or a college athlete, I think expecting your big ticket free agents to set the standard for the rest of the room is probably the right approach in college football. And you could tell that's, you know, when he talks about, you know, a lot of this being player driven, right? Like this needs to be the best players and the, you know, the guys that the loudest voices need to also, like, hold, you know, they need to be holding each other and the rest of the team accountable.
Well, it's funny because that player driven stuff to talk about him being, you know, being aggressive in every phase of the game. You know, there was a lot that he said at his press conference on Monday, his intro press conference, that he said throughout his time at South Florida, that he said when he was at Tennessee. And I think that's you know, it's not a canned line. I mean, the results speak for themselves. South Florida won 4 games in the 3 years before he got there. He hasn't gone to 3 straight bowl games, and they were, you know, could nearly be a 10-win team this season, putting up great offensive numbers and really fighting to be relevant in a crowded Group of 5 field. And it's tougher than ever to be consistently good at that level. And he was quickly, and he was consistently. And I think that's the thing is, like, you see some of that adaptability. Like, all right, like, let's be honest. Like, John Summerall was the lead candidate at Auburn, and he obviously ended up going to Florida. And I think there's a variety of reasons why that fell into place. But I think a lot of what drew people to John Summerall at Auburn, I think you get a lot of that in Alex Golish, which is, here's a guy who knows this league, who knows this area, who's had success in this league, and I think even more so for Golish than Summerall. And then he goes to, you know, the Group of 5 level, and rebuilds a program and takes them, you know, quickly to newer heights. And I think that's what Auburn needs. That's what Auburn wants. And then you look at when he was at Tennessee, what do you do with Josh Heupel? You know, Tennessee goes and hires a UCF coach and immediately gets out of their doldrums and builds themselves into a force again in the SEC. Auburn wants to do that here, so why not try to strike that up with a guy that people continue to say was very instrumental in that success and what Tennessee has become.
And as you said, I mean, now you have, with DJ Durkin returning, it's hard not to be excited if you're an Auburn fan looking at this, seeing the possibilities there on both sides of the ball, because Auburn needed some energy. They needed something to get the offense going. You know what you have with DJ Durkin. And granted, I mean, it's not perfect, but I think this is about as good a combination as Auburn could have hoped for, no matter who you were, you know, wanting or expecting as your head coach.
I agree. I mean, here's the thing is that if they'd have hired John Summerall, you'd have questions, okay, who's going to do it on offense?
Right.
You don't have questions.
And whose defense is it? I mean, if DJ stuck around.
You don't have that here with this combo. I mean, Alex Golish won't be calling plays, but it's going to be his offensive staff and a lot of what has worked for him at South Florida and at Tennessee is coming along with him. You know, and then DJ Durkin, pick up where you left off on defense. This is a team that was 15th in SP Plus on defense, top 25 in EPA per play on defense. The advanced stats really like this defense this season for Auburn, and I think they played well enough for the most part in the Iron Bowl to kind of prove that, hey, that's not the side of the ball that had the big problems. It had problems, but not the big problems. So you do that, and you look at how much youth played on that defense this season. Guys like Xavier Atkins and Malik Blockton and Amaris Williams and, you know, Elijah Melendez. You got so many guys. Eric Winters, like, so much freshman, sophomore, like, guys who can't go to the NFL right now, talent, that I think you're in a better position to retain because you keep the defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's a nice bonus. I don't think that needed to be the priority in the search for Auburn. I don't think it was, ultimately, but it's a nice bonus to have. And I think you saw some of that impact yesterday. You keep several really good recruits in the boat after retaining DJ Durkin. You flip a couple guys as well. And, you know, you've got some juice there on that side of the ball where, you know, it's not going to be the same cast of characters. It's not going to be the same coaches. There's change that happens year over year in college football anyway. But I think if you look at Auburn and say, okay, if you take the defense that you had this season, if you get close to that standard this year, and you do it with any improvement on offense, you could be a pretty good team right away. And I think that's going to be – it's a tough schedule. But if you're talking about year one under Alex Golish, showing improvement, getting to a bowl game, ending the streak of losing seasons here on the Plains, you got a pretty good setup with it when you retain DJ Durkin in that.
And we'll see who sticks around on defense, but there's a chance with some freshmen and sophomores that were on the field this year that some guys on the defense could even take a step forward from where they were last year, although there are also some players that, you know, from last year that won't be around anymore. You know, one thing I like about the Alex Golish decision is that you get Cody Burns as well, you know, a former Auburn player and coach, and a guy who I think really knows the lay of the land. If there was any concern about Alex Golish not knowing what he was getting into, I think Cody Burns can help him as someone who
he's been his right hand man,
and had a roller coaster. Look, he saw — you talk about a guy who was on the 08 and 2010 teams, right? Like a guy who saw the ups and downs.
Unfortunately, it was downs then up.
Sure, but a roller coaster ride himself. And I remember, you know, one of my concerns about, you know, this is a deep cut for longtime fans, Bill. Like, I remember one of the concerns about Brian Harsin was how much of an outsider he was and the lack of anyone who really, especially on the offensive side of the ball, who really knew. And there were some of us in this room who said, you know, Trooper Taylor would really make a lot of sense, or someone in that vein with a lot of SEC experience,
the thing is, it needs to be someone that head coach knows that he can count on, that also knows. There need to be those connections, and that's why I did not realize the connections that Alex Golish and DJ Durkin have. And that's what I think made that work, because it was like, is this really going to be able to work? Had not realized till both of them talked about knowing each other for over 20 years back in Ohio. And that's where those kinds of connections can really help with a transition and the carryover.
Yeah, I mean, I think they both have the same approach to football, right? Like, be aggressive, be violent, be attacking, create chaos, create havoc, do it fast. And have an edge about you, and I think those are the marks that when DJ Durkin's defense has been at its best over the last two seasons at Auburn, that's what they've done. They've done a lot of that same stuff. So I think it was an ideal fit. I mean, when it was, you know, he had to make that decision for himself, right? You know, if you think you have a shot at the head coaching job and you don't get it, and then it's like, hey, we still want you back. I mean, I've never been in that position before because I'll never be a coach, but like, you got to imagine just from the human element of it, it's like that's something you got to work through. That's something you got to deal with. And so it sounds like, you know, it works. But I think strip away from that when it was like, okay, in a football sense, would it make sense for DJ Durkin to come back to Auburn this season? It was like, yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of it's real symbiotic between these two. Like, these guys, I think, are going to play off of each other really, really well. I think you have a transition to a roster that, look, I'm going to be the last person on earth to tell you that Auburn needed to retain all these different players from a team that went 1-7 in SEC play. But I'm not a moron. I mean, I know that Auburn recruited really, really well these last few years.
The talent is so much better than a 1-7 SEC team. That's why.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like you look at the talent on the roster and say, okay, well, you have a better chance of keeping that now because you have this guy back. But you still get to make a lot of the changes that you mm-hmm. need to make by having him as the new head coach. I think it's a win-win. We'll see how it works out on the field. Like I said, it's going to be a tough season next year. We don't even know what the roster is going to look like. It's a very tough schedule, but I like the makeup of that because I think these two guys have a very similar approach to football. And to Dan's point, you know, it doesn't hurt that one of the most beloved players of the last 20 years at Auburn is back. And he has been a guy that, like you said, Bill, been the right-hand man for Alex Golish this past season, a great season at South Florida. He went off and, you know, was an NFL coach for a little while. Obviously had a lot of success with Golish at Tennessee as well. So, I mean, it just makes a lot of sense, you know, putting it all together with these guys. I think that's the reason why so many people are so excited about this crew. It's just it just fits. It just fits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're getting the best out of several different situations here by making this hire and making these moves.
Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer with us for a few more minutes. We need to get to our first break. We'll talk basketball, take a quick look at last night, and then preview the upcoming matchup against number 2 Arizona when we return here on the Thursday Drive.
And Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls, and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer with us on the drive hotline. And, Ferg, last night we talked about it a little bit at the top, and I know you had a great breakdown on it. I mean, Stephen Pearl not happy with the turnovers, and rightfully so. There were some more than just ill-advised decisions last night. Some, I don't know if I'd call them lazy, but just after you do it once or twice, don't do it anymore with some of those over-the-top, trying to go around people cross court. That just wasn't going to work last night. But Auburn, in every other facet, I thought not too bad last night against NC State.
I mean, it's really impressive that y'all were talking about earlier that you play a KenPom top 10 offense and you shoot 20 times fewer than they do and you beat them by 10. It's remarkable. I think it goes back. I think Auburn's defense the last three halves in particular, but for the most part, I would say probably, five out of their last eight halves they've played a basketball. I think their defense has made some really good strides. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at what they did in the second half against St. John's last night. I mean, that's a top 10 offense in the country, and you held them to season lows across the board.
Right.
2-point field goals, 3-point field goals, free throw rate, points being the big one, obviously. I think their defense
dominated them on the glass.
Yeah, did an excellent job. And that's an NC State team that gets after it on the offensive glass mm-hmm. As well. So, I mean, they did a really good job of that. Offensively, it's just like, you know, you're seeing an offense that's got such a high ceiling, but, like, the consistency's just got to come, right? You know, I think they came into this game thinking that it was going to be easier than that on offense. And so they tried to get away with stuff. That was just not going to happen. I think they weren't locked into what they needed to do. I think they thought, you know, considering the NC State has struggled on defense, they could just roll the ball out there and light it up. And, look, they did shooting it, but, I mean, they scored on over half their possessions and then turned it over on 30% of their possessions. So that ought to tell you just kind of what happens if you just take care of the rock in this game and just don't try anything too difficult. Make the simple pass. You know, don't try to hit. You know, it's Stephen Pearl keeps saying, don't try to, you know, don't try to throw Hail Marys. Just get the quick out right there. I think that was the big thing for them. When they did it, it looked really, really good. When they didn't, it was very, very frustrating. But the good news is that the ceiling of this offense is really impressive. That second half against St. John's was phenomenal. And then last night, you have Kevin Overton and Keyshawn Hall both shoot the lights out from mm-hmm. everywhere on the floor, perfect from the free throw line. You know, they combine for 11 threes. How about this? They are the first pair of teammates at Auburn to have 25 or more in a game since Bryce Brown and Jared Harper did it against Xavier and Maui that Final Four season. So, I mean, what you saw last night was a special, special tandem of shot making. Not bad for a guy who obviously is your first option as a scorer, but Kevin Overton is what, third, fourth option?
Fourth,
on the
maybe.
He showed such a high ceiling last night, which is great for the future.
Yeah, there were a couple of passes last night where, you know, you would say, I didn't know exactly what trick I was trying to do.
Hey,
check this out.
Hey, seriously, guys, Auburn is fortunate that they have the athletes that they do, because there were a few other passes that I thought were going out of bounds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
some guys 100%. Skying to save balls.
Yeah, and Steven, I mean, you've been following him for a while, Justin. If Auburn does not do a better job taking care of the ball, he will be 60 years old by the time this season ends, right?
Yep. Or carried off on a stretcher. I mean, goodness.
And that's the thing, guys, is like heading into really the St. John's game, this was one of the best teams in the country in not turning the ball over, right?
They hadn't turned it over more than eight times in the game going into the St. John's game. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in the first half against St. John's, they turn it over a ton. What do they do in that second half? Hardly turn it over.
Right.
And they reap the rewards. And in this game, you know, if they don't turn it over as much as they do and they don't have that one just absolutely disastrous defensive rotation in the middle of the first half, I mean, they blow out that NC State team. And that's no small feat, because mm-hmm. that is a top 30, top 35 team in the country this season. And I think the more time they get going together, they've got talent. Good grief, do they got talent. But, you know, they just got to figure some stuff out. So Auburn's going to be rooting for NC State the rest of the season, because I think that's a good team in the ACC. But, yeah, you're fortunate to walk out of that one not just with a win, but with a 10-point win, because usually you don't get to turn the ball over against an elite offense like that and live to tell about it.
No, speaking of elite, Auburn's facing a really – really talented team that some of their numbers, Ferg, I know you've looked at them and you know them. This Arizona team is, man, they are scorching.
They're incredible. And, you know, I know Auburn played Michigan last week in Vegas when they looked like the dream team, you know, out there. But, I mean, pound for pound, I'm willing to say this is going to be the toughest true road game Auburn has played in years. This Arizona team is scary. They are the seventh tallest team in the country, 11th in offensive rebounding rate. They have no weaknesses on the defensive end to speak of. They don't shoot a ton of threes, but when they do, they hit them. They're great from two because of the size they have up front. They've got two of the 10 best freshmen in the country playing together right now. Koa Pete destroyed Florida in his very first college mm-hmm. game. They got a 7-2 center who is just making life miserable on everybody down low. They got Toby Awaka coming off the bench, the former Tennessee big man. He's only the most efficient rebounder in the country right now. Jaden Bradley, you know, former Alabama player, is an excellent, excellent lead guard to have. He's driving downhill and scoring really well to start the year. They've got a number of shooters and weapons around those guys that can fill it up. Tommy Lloyd is really good, runs great stuff. He's been excellent. He comes from that Gonzaga tree where they run elite, efficient, smart offense. And he's got the size and the continuity and experience on this team to be really, really gnarly on the defensive end. So, I mean, Auburn's got the work cut out for him. They have faced some tough teams this season. They faced Houston and fought back the whole way. They faced Michigan and got destroyed pretty quickly. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do in a true road environment. I think one of the X factors for Auburn in this one is going to be having a full-strength front court. Filip Jovic, really good game for him off the bench last night.
Yeah, he's getting better.
Return from that wrist injury. He's getting better and better. Sebastian Williams-Adams continues to flash. Obviously, key
and Murph playing well. Murph was under the weather this week, so that's why he didn't play very much last night. Didn't play very well, I don't think, when he was out there.
No, he didn't.
And so you got to have that. You got to have that against this Arizona front court. On top of that, three-point shooting. Auburn's last two games, they have shot really well from beyond the arc. Like I said, Arizona does not rely on the three-point shot. So if Auburn can bring that shooting with them to Arizona and hold their own on rebounding and defense, they're going to have a shot to hang in this game. This is, yeah, like I said, this is going to be as tough of a game as I think Auburn's played in a true road environment. I think no moral victories, but playing close would be a really good sign for this program. But knowing the makeup of these guys, kind of like with the Houston game, they went to that Houston game thinking they were going to win. I don't know if they're going to necessarily say that about this Arizona game, but they're going to come in there kind of fearless. And I think it helps that, you know, Kevin Overton and Keyshawn Hall had phenomenal games Wednesday night. Both of those guys played really well against Arizona last season, including Keyshawn Hall's on the road with UCF at Arizona. And then, Kevin Overton had probably his best game of the season last year in the Big 12 tournament against Arizona. So that's going to help him.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit on the podcast, but Overton struggled in two games against Arizona in the regular season last year, and then put together what was maybe his best game at Texas Tech when he faced Arizona a third time in the conference tournament. Unique that a guy who played Arizona three times is going to see them again now that he's in the SEC. But that's the Auburn schedule this year.
And I think the big thing with KO, and you saw it with Tahad, even though his shot wasn't falling last night, but you saw it with the NC State team, just front to back. You know, when you're playing these teams like Arizona, we talk about how physical you have to be in the front court. You have to be physical in the back court too, with the weapons that Arizona's got. I think KO is as battle tested of a two way guard as you're going to find. And like, look, if his superstar ceiling type of potential is like going nuts from deep like he did last night and can just give you nearly a 30 ball out of nowhere, that's a really good sign for this team. So, I mean, he continues to work really hard on defense. Both of those two guys combined for 19 rebounds last night.
Yeah, that's right.
I think if I remember correctly, I think NC State only had like 25 as a team. They do a lot of dirty work in addition to scoring, and you're going to have to do that. You're going to have to play all out for 40 minutes to have a shot against this Arizona team tomorrow on Saturday night.
Looking forward. It is a late one on Saturday night, so your sleep schedule's got to be all messed up.
So like I just like getting back from Vegas, I'm like still kind of on Pacific time for a little bit, and then I got back used to being on Central time, and now I'm going back to you know Pacific time. I'm looking forward to it though. Right. I mean, real quick. I mean, when I go on these trips, you know, I'm self-employed, so I'm not getting reimbursed or anything. So I take pretty cheap flights. I'm taking a very early flight out to Tucson tomorrow, and then on my way back, I'm taking a red eye on Sunday night. So there's a real chance that I could roll back into Auburn on Monday morning and then roll right into a press conference with Alex Golish a couple hours later. But like I said earlier, it might be tiring. My sleep schedule might be out of whack, but you know, it's a whole lot of fun because so many people are excited right now, and it just makes writing and podcasting a whole lot easier.
Well, you give folks, I mean, so much more for their money than you expect to find just about anywhere. Let everybody know what's out there now and what you're working on as you get ready to head out.
Yeah, a ton of stuff this week on Alex Golish, DJ Durkin, a lot of stuff we talked about in that first segment. Just what we're hearing and seeing about this staff and this team kind of coming together. Dan and I did a lot of basketball and football on this podcast. It'll come out tomorrow morning for subscribers. I'm going to write a mailbag in Arizona tomorrow when I get settled in and have that out on Saturday morning. Since it's such a late tip on Saturday night, we'll have plenty of time for that. I will be back. You know, I'll have coverage in Tucson this weekend. We'll be back to talk more football and basketball next week. So Auburn football, men's basketball, busiest time of year, and we're doing a ton of stuff with it. So auburnobserver.com, check it out. It's $6 a month, or for the first 25 days of December, we're doing a 25% off sale if you buy a yearly subscription. Usually it's 60, down to 45 bucks a year for your first year. 45 bucks for your first year if you subscribe to the Observer today. So auburnobserver.com, check it out there.
Great stuff, Justin. Thanks a lot, man. Have a good trip.
See you, bud.
Yep, thank you, guys.
Justin Ferguson joining us here on the opening quarter of the Thursday drive. Yeah,
I don't even know what day it is. Sorry. Yeah, I'm sure. Justin and I have both, we haven't been in the same places all the time. We both were in Vegas.
I didn't know what day it was after having yesterday off. It felt like, what is it, Monday? Is it Tuesday? What day is today?
We were both able to see the two of Auburn's three games in Vegas, but we've both been... Yeah, we've both been out and about, and it's been a lot of fun and been an adventure. And the road, it continues for Justin as he's going to go check out Auburn in Arizona this weekend. And that's I think
9 o'clock tip.
9 o'clock, 9 o'clock tip, 7 o'clock out in Arizona time. I think they're on. They flip, right? I think Arizona has they switch time zones or whatever.
They're on Pacific.
Some daylight savings deal out there. It is really exciting to be able to see Auburn play these kind of games. And Arizona has been, they've been one of the best programs, for 30, 35 decades. Years? I mean, think about back to what to the, does it start with Lute Olson, really?
Yes.
And then, he consists, Arizona winning 25-plus games and making it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament,
that's
at least.
That's expected.
It was one of the safest bets
in
sports. And this might be... this might be his best team there at Arizona this year. Tommy Floyd. So I think it'll be should be really exciting stuff.
All right, we need to get to break. We're going to open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here, 16 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Love for you to join in. All right, one of the things we were talking about here over the break was brought up. I was on with Doug today. He didn't have any... He said he needed some help, so I went and helped him out today on his show. But one of the things that came up,
I've been saying that for a while,
yeah,
about Doug.
Well, he does, but no. one of the things that came up was word that Kansas State, which finished a disappointing 6-6 for them, apparently their players have voted not to play in a bowl game, and I hadn't really looked at the numbers. I just had sort of thought, well, there are probably enough teams to cover the bowl games. But that may not be the case. It may be a situation where if there aren't enough 6-6 teams, we've seen it in the past, that a team with a sub-500 record would be invited. And that goes based on APR, the academic progress rate. And Auburn's APR was really good. And the text that Doug got was that Auburn – was the top APR school and very well could get be eligible to be invited to a bowl game. And the question was, would Auburn and Alex Golish want to have a bowl game? It didn't take me, an immediate response. My immediate reaction would be absolutely. I would think that if possible, Alex Golish would love that opportunity because – the time between now and January 2nd, he's evaluating players. Players are trying to evaluate him and his system. Decisions are going to be made. And what better way to understand what each side could be getting than to have practice leading up to a bowl game?
Yeah, there's a lot of assumptions to make here, but I think – so let's assume that the reason the Kansas State players didn't want to go to a bowl game is because a lot of them know they're going in the portal,
right?
And why risk injury in a bowl game in order to if you know you're going into the transfer portal totally healthy right now. So I do wonder if there would be some reluctance from some players at Auburn to participate in a bowl game this year. But there also, I imagine, would be a tremendous amount of
there'd be a lot of possibilities of, hey, I can show something, I can show something, or maybe I'll get an opportunity that I didn't have, or we'll find out.
Or some seniors who might be thinking this is my last time playing football, and I would get, one more game. I think that there are, if you have a roster that's on board, right? I see the benefit of Alex Golish getting 3 weeks of practice and a game.
Absolutely.
And some guys can maybe audition for a spot in his, you know, on his radar, in his two deep next year.
I can just, and I can see a lot of players that obviously this season, you know, ended and left a bad taste in their mouth, and an opportunity to try to go out and go, no, we can do better, and we can show that whether they're all planning on coming back or not.
Now, again, now I don't know.
No, we don't know if this is going to come to fruition.
Well,
or not.
And I don't know. Exactly. We don't know how real a possibility is, and we also don't know like anyone's state of mind, right? As far as going into the game versus deciding they're going to test the waters of free agency, and they don't want to bother with a bowl game in the meantime. And I can even imagine there could be some players who are like, yeah, maybe I want to play on next year's team, but I'm ready to start focusing on next season, and a bowl game is not necessarily
For the coaches, I think they feel like, man, this would be a great start for next season to be able to you know, get a jump on spring ball.
Yeah, but I think I don't know.
Love to hear your thoughts, our listeners' thoughts on this. If that possibility were out there, what would you say? Right. Now, I can see fans. I can understand, though. Fans would go, who cares? About, mm-hmm. I mean, you might want to see how this team, plays under Alex Gulish's offense. But, I mean, I don't know that there'd be a wild, rush to buy Independence Bowl tickets or something like
see,
that.
See, I want to pick your brain about something you were talking about a little bit off the air that I think is curious. Speaking of next year's team and the directions that Alex Gulish can go in, I feel like there are different opinions out there about the quarterback room that Auburn could have next year. I mean, right now you've got Deuce and
Ashton and Jackson.
Ashton and Jackson. They all have eligibility remaining.
Right.
There are, I think it's fairly easy to draw to conjure up the possibility.
To imagine the possibility of Byron Brown
following his coaching staff from USF to Auburn, if that's what he wants to do.
Right.
There are going to be other quarterbacks in the portal that people could look at. But, where you are on sort of how much Auburn should prioritize Deuce Knight as the future versus explore and what you think they might do.
Yeah, I think Auburn would, Alex Gulish would love to have Deuce Knight back next year. But if you get Byron Brown, how do you not expect him to be the starter next year?
And would Deuce Knight want to stick around if Auburn made a big time
very legitimate
portal
question
addition?
Since he redshirted this year,
right? Or is he expecting to be the starter sort of wherever he is going into January, or maybe not clear cut, but a guy with a clear path to playing time as the starter?
I think it's very interesting.
Yeah. It's what Byron Brown did this year is a big reason why Alex Gulish has this job.
Yeah, as Alex Gulish pointed out, or somebody pointed out, only
it was 12, Cohen, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Only 12 quarterbacks in history have rushed for 3,000 and passed. Excuse me, rushed for 1,000 and passed for 3,000 yards in the same season.
Now there are some folks who think Byron Brown's an NFL draft pick, right? So like there are multiple paths. True. For him, and if he went in the portal, it's not just Auburn that would be a player for the services of Mr. Brown. So, we're knocking down dominoes here, right? Like the head coach domino has fallen, the defensive coordinator domino has fallen. Let's see what they've got in store in the quarterback room.
All right, we'll get to Slack before we get to our final break of hour number one. Hey, Slack.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
How do y'all feel about the rotation basketball team right now?
I think they thought that they would have a little bit. I wonder if between. I mean, Bashir apparently has had some health problems these last couple of games. Simon Walker was he under the weather as well?
I don't know.
Last night is that the?
Well, I believe so. I mean, Steven had said that quite a few of the guys had flu-like symptoms, during the week.
You got a point, but I mean, look, I was struck by the fact that when they came back against St. John's, it was six guys. Like it was the five starters. I mean, you didn't even have Jovic.
No. Another thing. You'll have him, and I really like the way he's coming along.
Well, I like the two guys that go to with 38 and 33 when they go to substitution. But I, you know what? I feel like Freeman is probably the most athletic guy on the team. Mm-hmm. And we don't run an offense for him, you know. I feel like he needs to get more shots, but, you know, hey, when they were throwing him up last night, who really cared?
Yeah, when they were hitting him that way.
I really like it's a little bit like Chaney, where I really like Freeman when he gets going to the basket.
Oh, yeah.
Right, like the momentum's there.
My goodness, his ability to Euro step dunk.
The catch and shoot game and the spot up game isn't quite at that level yet, which makes him
getting to the basket. I think.
You know what? Hey, I really like Sebastian. I think they got something in the freshman Williams Adams.
Oh yeah. It's just, you know, I don't see the obsession with when you go to the bench, you bring in number 21 in the ball game. I don't understand.
Well, again, I think he's been there for a while. He's worked hard. But I do think that some of the guys not being completely healthy probably play into that. So, good stuff. It's like, hey, we've got to get to our final break of hour number one. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
River City Door Company understands your time is valuable. That's why.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive here on this Thursday evening. Bill and Dan in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we'll get to the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390, and of course it's sponsored by Skybar, as Terry's been hanging on since hour one. Hey, Terry.
Hey, bud.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Dan. How y'all doing?
Doing fine.
Good. Well, y'all being out yesterday, yesterday was also National Signing Day. I was wondering if anything happened. I think it was Chris Gordy talking about it on Jacob's show preceding you guys.
Yeah, Auburn ended up signing 16 players yesterday, held on to the guys that that they were hoping to get, flipped a couple, the Wells brothers from Mississippi. Corey is the really highly touted defensive lineman at 6'5", 330, and his brother Chris. Let's see, they also signed Brian Williams, a receiver from Orlando who'd been committed to Alabama. Looked like he was going to back out of that, but Auburn able to get him. So they added a few players, and they're waiting on Jace Matthews, who says he is still planning on signing with Auburn, but waiting until 2 o'clock tomorrow. He is one of the top players in the state of Mississippi and another receiver, and I can see where receivers would be pretty intrigued by the offense that Alex Golish and company are going to run.
Well, did they sign a quarterback yesterday?
They did. Signed a quarterback that had been committed to South Florida in Reese Brush. He's out of Tampa. 6'2", 187 is what he's listed at.
Yeah, although it does seem like the immediate options at quarterback are probably going to be guys that are a little bit older than him, whether that's Auburn, you know, convincing Deuce Knight to stick around and trying to build around him.
I think Ashton Daniels is planning on returning.
Ashton Daniels will come in and compete as well, and then you've also got you could potentially have someone from the portal coming in to try to be the starter as well, Terry.
And the guy that everybody thinks makes sense is Byron Brown, who was South Florida's quarterback this past year, has 1 year of eligibility. 6'3", 230, threw for over 3,000 yards and ran for 1,000 this past year.
Now, that was my next question. Do you guys think he'll come to Auburn?
You know, I thought it sort of makes sense. You get to move up into the SEC. The only thing that would make me hesitate a little bit is, man, South Florida immediately moved to bring in Brian Hartline as their head coach, and you'd figure they're probably going to run a pretty wide open offense as well. But I think there's a more than decent shot that he would follow his head coach and offensive coordinator to Auburn.
Well, guys, I appreciate you. Have a great day.
Good hearing from you, Terry.
Yeah, so we must have it slipped our minds that David Pascal's unavailable this week. Is that a
yeah? Yeah, he may have.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, he's okay. So we'll catch up with David.
That's right. They've got they're doing a show from their state playoffs.
Oh,
that's
cool.
Right. I'd forgotten about that. So that's my bad. So yeah, we'll get David back.
I'll tell you what,
speaking of state championships, let's do that.
You want to go ahead and do that? So you want to take an early break and see if we can get Jason Caldwell?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I'll text him.
Okay, yeah.
We can keep going because I'd like to get some folks' thoughts on what we were talking about there toward the end of hour number one
There's a lot of excitement about, the question of whether or not Auburn should go for the bowl game.
The quarterback situation. I'd love folks' thoughts on, who are some players you feel like are must retain that would be critical to get to keep? That is,
I mean, there are some freshmen and sophomores that you look at, and you could. I mean, I think Cam Coleman, I think, would be the guy that starts a lot of lists in that regard.
After the last couple of ball games,
Malcolm Simmons, broke through towards the end of the season. I know folks that are still really interested in the potential of Perry and Bryce as well.
If you're
talking about all four of those guys, I think at the Xavier Atkins had a phenomenal second year. College football.
Defensively, he is number one.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question.
Xavier Atkins was fantastic. I would say that I'd love to. How about Malik Blockton? After 2 years of college football, local guy who's just gone to war on the interior defensive line every single week. I'd love to see a year three from Malik Blockton. I'd love to see a year three of Jay Crawford. Absolutely. How about a year three of Amaris Williams? Bill, think about what you saw from Amaris at different times this year, and especially with Keldrick and Kieron both moving on to the next level of their careers. So I think that and both going to the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, and I heard some folks going, well, Kelger's got another year of eligibility. Once you accept that Senior Bowl invite, you are pro, and a good decision by him. He has nothing left to prove at this level.
And that's something we've expected since Auburn signed him.
Since we saw him.
Since the first time
we ever saw him. Yes.
The first time you ever saw him, you thought that's a guy who's going to play. He's going to play 3 years of college football because the rule is that he has to play three years of college football. He was probably ready to make the jump to the NFL last year if the rules allow it. There are some guys that are just that advanced athletically. And the thing about the NFL is trying to get that second contract, right? It's like you want to start your career as early as possible if you think you can play in the NFL, because the sooner you can get that second contract and lock in your pension, and NFL careers are short. Right, like you want to get started as soon as you can, and so I think there are some guys on this year's team that especially for a 1-7 SEC team, there are a lot of guys on this year's team that you would think are only going to play 3 years of college football. I think we just named a couple of them: Cam Coleman, Malcolm Simmons, Jay Crawford, Amaris Williams, Malik Blockton, Xavier Atkins. How's that for a list of freshmen and sophomores that you could? I mean, Omar Mabson is somebody that I know a lot of folks would say, that's a guy with, especially considering that he reclassified. That's a guy you'd love to remember.
He should be wrapping up his senior year right now.
So I mean, I think that's that is something to watch for over the next I didn't mention the young safeties. Right, you got
Eric Winters and Newboy
there is
a lot of young talent on this team that you'd love to see back. We'll get thoughts on that. Speaking of,
didn't mention the true freshman defensive lineman.
No, you're right. Jordan and Malik there are quite a few. But we were talking about the state championships, which are going on in Birmingham, and Jason Caldwell is up there. We weren't on the air yesterday because we were preempted by women's basketball, so no JC yesterday. But he's got a few minutes for us from chilly Birmingham. When we come back, we're going to get to our first break of hour number two, and we'll check in with Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover on the flip side here on the Thursday Drive.
at Game Day.
Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we're going to head to the Drive hotline and head up to Birmingham, where the Alabama High School State Championships are underway right now. The 1A in the 1A game, at least just a couple of minutes ago, wasn't looking so good for the local team that is competing. That's Wadley against Maplesville. Maplesville had pulled out to a 3-touchdown lead. We're going to check in. When the state championships are going on, you can count on Jason Caldwell being there. I don't know. When was the last time you missed the state championship games, Jason?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the last time I wasn't at the state championship games. I'm trying to think. Probably before it was a Super 7 and even then, or Super 6 then.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And even then, I was probably at a game somewhere. It just mm-hmm. They just weren't all together at that time. So it's probably been a long time since I haven't seen at least a state championship game of some form.
Yep. Is the Maplesville still in control?
Yeah, it's now a 42-14 wow. lead. And unfortunately for Wadley, Jaquez Wilkes got hurt right at the end.
Ooh.
Was the lead blocker and kind of got a submarine and is out. They checked to see if he had broken his foot. It's just, I think a rough sprain, and so he's been on crutches, so he has not played. The second half won't come back, and so that pretty much probably ends the chances for Wadley here tonight.
Yeah, that's because he is a man among boys at the 1A level. There's no question about that.
He is, and, you know, Wadley's got a couple of young guys that are pretty good, but Maplesville's got, you know, they probably got more good players than Wadley does, and that's the thing tonight. You look at Nehemiah McCary's a 10th grader for them that's probably 6'4", 225. That's got a bunch of offers already. They got another 10th grader that's a big kid. But they, you know, if you look, if you just walk Maplesville out and walk them up probably against anybody in the first four classifications other than Jackson, they're probably going to at least hold their own. Maplesville definitely looks better on the hoof than either one of the 3A teams did today. There's no question about that. So it's a pretty talented team that's fixing to go undefeated. And they've given up 14 today, so that means they've given up 59 points this season for Maplesville.
Yeah, that is really impressive. You mentioned Jaquez Wilkes, one of Auburn's signees from yesterday. And we had a question about it just before we brought you on about – recruiting. I thought Auburn did a pretty good job considering salvaging yesterday and then waiting for one more tomorrow, right?
Yeah, Jace Matthews tomorrow. And, you got 2 days to kind of hold a class together, see if you can add a couple of folks. And I thought they did a good job. I like DeMarcus Broughton, the tight end kid from Mary Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
I think look at the tight end position. Obviously, you go, look, they need help. And whether he can help right away or not, we'll see. You look at an offensive lineman, quarterback, a wide receiver that weren't on the board before, a wide receiver, Brian Williams, that was committed to Alabama at one point, and athletic, 6'4", big kid. And you know, then you lose a couple that I think Auburn just moved in a different direction with. But all in all, you look and go, man, it was a pretty good job to kind of piece this thing together at the end and get yourself a solid group in this first abbreviated class.
Well, obviously, with the announcement just coming Sunday that Alex Golish is head coach, and then, you know, it's been, I'm sure, a whirlwind for him. Love to get your thoughts. I mean, he wasn't, you know, a name that was talked about that much. I mean, obviously, what he had done at South Florida had been noticed by quite a few folks, but we were talking about it a little earlier with Justin Ferguson. I mean, my feeling... I don't know that you could have, heading into this, knowing what you had, what you'd like to have back, now looking and seeing you retain DJ Durkin and you add a coach on the other side of the ball who now you don't have to worry about him calling plays. He's bringing his offensive coordinator with him. I really like the combination that Auburn has on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you look at it, and you know, this is a guy that it's funny because, you know, John Cohen used the word edge about a dozen times that first time we talked to him about what are you looking for in a coach. And you hired a coach who had the word edge on his hat during the game. I mean, that's how much he believes in it. So, listen, I trust Cody Burns. Known him a long time. And when Cody tells me, hey, this guy's going to get it done, he's a different kind of guy. He is straight to the point, aggressive. You know, you think hard-nosed and tough, and you know, I think all those things. And you think about that from a guy that's been an offensive guy, that's normally a pretty good sign because normally those two things don't go together a whole lot. But I do think that goes together with him. And so you look at what they've done on offense, that there's things that we talked about it. Look, in this day and age where coaches that used to do tempo quit doing tempo because the rules changed, he figured out a way to keep doing it. They continue to do tempo. They want to go fast. They want to do those things. And I mean, even this season, we saw it. When Auburn did that, they looked like an offense. When they did not do that, they did not look very good, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so I think you get back to using tempo, doing some of those things on offense. And hey, run the football, use the quarterback, all the things that you think about. But when you think about Tennessee and USF and all the things, they don't throw the football. And they're going to do some things with it. So I like it. And like I said, obviously keeping DJ Durkin, you know, defensively you get to kind of keep what you're doing and stay moving forward on that side of the ball in terms of scheme. And so, yeah, I think it's about as win-win as you can get, in my opinion.
It was really impressive what the USF offense could do this year. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, sort of Alex Golish and the possibility of, you know, their quarterback continuing their career. I think some of the continuity there, bringing Cody Burns with you, a guy who knows the lay of the land, is respected and admired, and has a lot of familiarity, to say the least, with the situation that Alex Golish is stepping into.
Yeah, I think I would expect that, you know, you bring Alex Golish in, and there's kind of a trio of guys on offense that were the guys that kind of ran things at South Florida, and I would expect all three of those guys to be at Auburn, where you can talk about quarterback, coach, OC, Cody Burns, wide receiver, then an O-line coach. I think if you keep that group together, then that's a really good starting point because that's three guys. Look, hey, you know exactly what you want. You know what your expectations are. And then, again, now the next – stage of this is what does it look like from a roster standpoint?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing you have to figure out now. And not only Auburn, not only teams with new coaches, but teams with coaches that have been, everybody's going to have to figure that out because it's going to change. Because, you know, I think people have to understand that, listen, this is the first year where everybody's got money. There's been a lot of people that have had money already. Now everybody's got money. Purdue's got money. Illinois's got money. Baylor. All these people, because of the contracts and because of this, you know, quote-unquote salary cap, now all those schools are going to have money. And so somebody's going to be willing to pay more than you are for just about everybody on your roster at some point. You got to figure out, you know, this is where the GM roles and all these people become really valuable because you have to determine the value of your own players right now. How much do we think this guy's worth? Because I'm telling you, as much as you think a guy's worth, somebody that doesn't have a guy as good as that guy is going to come up to you and go, hey, we think you're worth more.
Right.
So you're going to have to figure out, okay, how much is it worth? How much are you can't, because people are like, oh, man, do we have enough money? No, nobody has enough money to pay what everybody's willing to pay for your guys. Nobody does, even Texas Tech, because somebody on the line is going to go, hey, we need a starting offensive lineman, your third team guard. You're paying him $50,000. We're going to pay him $500,000 because he's going to be our starter. Mm-hmm. That's the world that we live in now, and that's why this next month and a half is going to be really crazy.
And one thing that is good, there was some confusion about this, you know, a while back before when we were talking about coaching changes being made. The fact that now, I mean, coaches have and players have until January 2nd to be making those decisions as to who they really want. I mean, as far as coaches, who they really, really want and evaluate, you don't have to worry about that 5-day window is something that happens after this kind of period. So there's a little bit of time, at least for the players and coaches, to try to know each other, get to know each other, and evaluate. And, Jason, I wanted to ask you something that that is starting to bubble up a little bit. Apparently, Kansas State's players have voted that they don't want to go to a bowl game, and there don't appear to be enough 6-6 teams, and Auburn is very high on the APR. Question I was asked, and didn't take me a split second to come up with my answer. If Auburn's offered that opportunity, would Alex Golish want to do that? And I can't imagine why not.
Well, I have a different take.
All right.
Yeah, it'd be great to have 15 extra days to practice.
And that's what I was thinking.
The flip side is, would fans understand that it's only 15 days of practice? Because if you go out and lose 40-12, that's not a great way to start off the next regime of a coaching staff. Are you willing to do that? Who plays? Can you get enough offense in? Because, like, it's gone. Like, your offense is gone now. Like, these guys don't know the last offense. Can you do enough in 15 days to get ready to play a game? And what would it look like? Now, defensively, I think you'd be fine if you have enough players to go out and they want to go do it. But, man, it would be taking a huge chance to start off with just a lead balloon of an effort. And that, to me, I don't know that it's worth it to submarine the next era, because I'm just telling you, if you do it, fans aren't going to understand.
I can see that. I just would think, I think if you've got enough players that want to stick, that it's going to be very difficult for Auburn to be facing a team that is anywhere near as talented as they are.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But, again, how much offense can you get in a 15-day window to be able to line up and play in the system that they know? It's really hard. Again, if it had been DJ Durkin, and you had most of the staff still here to get you through,
it'd be easy. 100%.
Yeah, 100%. In this situation, where you've already basically changed the offense, and that's already done.
So
I just don't know how.
So
much
here's you what you do, Jason. We won't let anybody know this, but here's what you do: you say yes, you're going to. And you practice for 15 days, and then all of a sudden a bunch of players get sick, so you can't play.
Yeah, you can do that. I'm sure that's been done before, yeah.
Although there also would be the question of, like, when Hugh Freeze had the bowl game a couple of years ago, and he said, and I know other coaches have said, I wish we weren't playing in this bowl game. I wanted to spend this time recruiting, and I wanted to spend this time getting ready for the portal to open up, right? And it's the thought that, like, if you're Alex Golish –
recruiting's done. So that was December 21st that time.
But you've got a month of portal work to get ready for, right? I mean,
the most important portal work is trying to keep guys home.
Yes, it is.
And that's it. And so that's why I think there's so much on the plate. You're right. You got to hire a staff. You got to get a staff in place, and they've got to start scouting portal guys elsewhere.
Right.
While you're also trying to make sure. Here's the thing. You also got to scout your own roster, because there's going to be players on this team that they go, hey, we don't want that guy back.
Yeah.
There's going to be other guys go, we got to have that guy back.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the situations that have to happen. And, like, that's a lot. To try to do that and just play a bowl game to see if you can go 6-7 mm-hmm. while you're playing.
Well, I'm not worried about going 6-7.
I just don't know that there's the upside outweighs what could potentially be a negative consequence, in my opinion. Now, they might choose to do it, but to me, I don't know that I would take that risk.
And a flat performance in a bowl game would also, I mean, it could that do any damage?
Oh, that's what he was talking about with fans. In the fans.
How about this, to prospective players in the portal?
Absolutely. And you're going, man, look, that looks just like what I saw last time.
Yeah.
I just don't know that in this situation, you'd like to have 15 practice days to get started. But, I don't know that it would be worth it for me in this situation.
So, Jason, we mentioned before we brought you on, we were talking about freshmen and sophomores, first and second-year college football players, guys who can't go to the NFL draft that you would think have have to be priorities for this staff to retain. Who comes to mind as some of the names on your list, guys at the top of your list, and even some guys that maybe people wouldn't think about that you think could be really important pieces moving forward for this team?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a bunch of them because they got a bunch of really talented freshmen and sophomores. And so I think you look and the building blocks are there. And I think from those young guys, you look and go, you would think right now that Deuce Knight is a great fit for what they want to do on offense. And so you go and, like, you know, you'd like to keep him and obviously be make him a part of it. But you also know that you're going to have an older, experienced quarterback, even if Ashton Daniels comes back.
Right.
If Jackson Arnold does it, which I don't expect to happen, you're still going to have another one because you got to have three guys to go compete. So, again, you're going to go, look, we're bringing in another experienced guy. Do you still keep a guy like Deuce? Does he stay? I mean, like, that's why these situations are so much more complex than they used to be. But I think you look and go Deuce, and, man, you start to talk about the name, just go offense, and you go, obviously, there's a bunch of receivers. And you go, like, look, you'd like to keep, I think, most all those guys, and Cam and Malcolm and Perry and, you know, those guys. I think Bryce Kane came on. Yeah. I like him. I think he's a great teammate, too. And so I think those are guys you prioritize. And Sam Turner, I think, is going to be a good player. But, you know, there's – I mean, like Jacoby Ward and some of these young offensive linemen, I think are guys that have a chance to be really good. We just didn't see them. And, again, those are positions where you have to keep guys, DeAndre Carter and some of those guys. And defensively, I mean, you look and go Jordan Carter and Malik Autry and Darion Smith and Jared Smith and Bryce Diaz, Elijah Melendez, and, you know, I mean, obviously DeMarcus Riddick. But you think about Anquan Fagans and Eric Winters and you know, there's again, you know, defensively, you can talk about there's 15 probably freshmen, sophomores that play key roles for this team that you go, man, those are guys that are going to be, you know, really good players that I think you'd like to hold on to.
Xavier Atkins was just a sophomore this past year, too.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Xavier Atkins. Golly. Like I'm saying, there's just not, you know, there were some older guys, but it was either fifth, sixth-year seniors, or freshman sophomores. There's not a whole lot in between. And so I think that's the thing you look at for now for this team.
You mentioned staffing, and I know I thought it was a little ambitious, but, I mean, we'll see. Still, looking to see who all is added to this staff, and that's something, you know, there may be some guys that are still coaching, may have teams that are competing in conference championship games, things like that this weekend. But I know he'd like to try to get that together so that when you are trying to talk to your players about staying, they'll know who their position coach is going to be if you don't have one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah. And here's the thing. Even though it hasn't been announced, doesn't mean it hasn't already happened probably
True.
In some of these cases. So I think there's probably a lot of folks that right now there's only Alex Golish on the website. I don't know if it's been updated or not. We know there's more guys here than that already.
Well, I think it's interesting when I looked at South Florida's website, and Joel Gordon is not listed on South Florida's website anymore. A couple of the other guys we've heard about coming are no longer on South Florida's website, so I think that gives you a pretty good idea.
Absolutely, yes. I think you can start to put two and two together a little bit, and so I think it's getting closer, and I think, you know, we get him Monday and as a quasi-signing day, but also probably to start talking about some of these staff things as well.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Jason, man, really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. It is a busy, busy time, with roster retention, the coaching staff, basketball, obviously, going on. Auburn getting ready to head to Arizona after that win over NC State last night. So there's plenty that you guys are pumping out.
Yeah, we've got a whole lot going on. So, yeah, check us out, auburnundercover.com, part of the 24/7 network. And like I said, can find us all over the place. And like I said, got updates here and then heading to another big basketball game this weekend at Arizona. So another huge challenge for them as they continue this tough stretch to begin. So got all that covered. Recruiting, you know, roster retention, we'll get started here probably the next couple of weeks, really get digging into that. But, you know, coaches, staff, and more. So we'll see.
How's the weather? Is it wet up there or just cold?
We had a little sprinkle this morning, a little
Good.
Sprinkle now, but I would guess by the time we get to 5A tonight, Moody and Viger, that it's probably going to be pretty wet and really cold, so that's not going to be a fun one tonight.
No kidding. Well, stay dry and as warm as you can, man. We appreciate you spending some time with us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Jason Caldwell joining us here on the Thursday Drive. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Open the phone lines back up. Love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on a possible bowl game? Who are some of the players that you feel, Auburn needs to do everything they can to retain? That, anything else on your mind sports-wise in the final half hour of the Thursday Drive.
Live at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Hey, a little addendum to the game day men's health spot that just ran. Want to let you know they're open till 6 o'clock. Oh. If you got any questions, you can give them a call, 209-3706. They'll be glad to answer any of your questions. Go in and see them. You'll be glad you did. 334-321-1390. That is the drive hotline sponsored by Skyball.
Yeah, we've talked a lot of football this week, especially with the Alex Golish announcement on Sunday morning, and it's a little unfortunate just because Auburn is playing such a huge basketball game this weekend that it's like it'd be great to dedicate all that attention on basketball, but I mean, look, this is a gigantic piece of news, right? When Alex Golish, when Auburn goes and makes them, we knew whoever you move on from Hugh Freeze to the next coach, it's going to be a really important time for Auburn football. You wonder how many. I mean, people keep pointing to the fan support, and it's like if this hire doesn't work out, and you continue, as a bottom half of the SEC football program and sometimes bottom quarter of the SEC.
Oh, yeah. It's more often than not the last 5 years.
Are you going to be able to
count on that continued support?
Yeah. How long before
you imagine you could.
How long before that starts to dry up? I mean, even programs like Tennessee and Nebraska, where it was unthinkable. Like it grates on people after a while, and so I think Alex Golish, hopefully it works, and it resembles some hires that have worked in the SEC in recent years, right? I mean, what was Gus Malzahn when Auburn made him the head coach in 2010? He was he was someone who'd been a successful offensive coordinator in the SEC, who became a successful mid-major head coach, and then Auburn hired him. What was Lane Kiffin when Ole Miss hired him a couple of years ago? He was a successful offensive coordinator for Nick Saban, who became a mid-major winner at FAU.
Yeah, now he had had prior head coaching experience.
He'd had prior head coaching experience, but he got left on the tarmac by USC because his team quit on him, and he got fired by Al Davis in one of the craziest press conferences I've ever seen.
And ticked off Tennessee because they thought they had something special.
But when Ole Miss hired him, I think it was based largely on what he'd done at Alabama and what he had done at FAU.
Yes.
Right? Which and you look and for Alex Golish, like this hire is largely about what he did at Tennessee, which got him the USF job, and then what he did at USF.
Yes. A program that was just miserable.
Sure.
I mean, they were awful. For the under Jeff Scott,
Josh Heupel was and he probably didn't have as much success as a coordinator as some of these other guys, but Josh Heupel did well enough as a coordinator to get the UCF job, and then won enough at UCF to justify being hired at Tennessee, and he's been the most successful head coach at Tennessee since Phil Fulmer, and so this is if you're looking for someone to stabilize, what's been. What's continued to go wrong really since the firing of Gus Malzahn at Auburn? This guy seems like he would, he seems to fit the bill based on some hires that have worked recently in the SEC. Like that's.
Oh, I agree. I mean, it really has been crazy. Just the coaching turnover here in the last few days. Hey, and we haven't even mentioned today's news. We talked Tuesday about Brian Hartline, South Florida moving quickly to replace their opening. JMU, James Madison, has moved quickly as well. And here's a familiar name back in the group of five.
A lot of familiar names. I mean, Neil Brown's name came up.
Neil Brown's at North Texas.
He's the new head coach at North Texas.
Billy Napier, by the way, is James Madison.
That's right. I was gonna get to the Billy. Yeah, Billy Napier, former Florida coach, former Louisiana coach, going back to the Sun Belt at JMU, a place that has won quite a bit. Yep. Coach Chesney. Right, Chesley. He's the new head coach at UCLA. Morris was the coach at North
Eric
Texas.
Morris is now at Oklahoma State.
He got the Oklahoma State job.
Look at all the some of the better group of five schools, how their coaches have gotten the opportunity to move up to the Power Four.
Yeah, I mean, just on one day.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you had Arkansas, Auburn, and Florida all hiring
Auburn, Florida, and UCLA.
Yeah, all hiring from the mid-major ranks, and the Sun Belt and the American in particular have seen a lot of their coaches getting the call. I think it shows that, you know, I think in this era of college football, a lot of programs think they can compete if they get the right guy, and if they don't think they have the right guy, you get your chance to show that you're the guy
in a 2 or 3 years.
But once you've shown enough,
you don't have as long a chance as you used to.
Once you've shown them enough, if it still seems like you're not the guy, it's not really an era where you get another year to win. Now, if you've
Florida State is an exception,
I would say if you've won previously, you get a chance to win your way out of it. But if you're still waiting to, like, if Hugh Freeze had won 10 games in year one or year two, maybe this season wouldn't have gotten him fired.
Did you hear that Florida State supposedly was that other school that was involved with Lane?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they couldn't afford to fire Mike Norvell.
They've got a couple of boosters.
Somebody was willing. If they could get Lane, somebody, I guarantee you, had said, well, then I'll pay off Mike Norvell.
No, they got a couple. There's some, you know what? There's some real nice houses on the water in the Florida.
Yeah, there are.
In the Florida,
it's fun to think of it.
In the Florida panhandle. There's some real nice houses that have Florida State stuff, you know. So, I mean, I think
you're right.
I think there's like they'd find that money somewhere. But no, it's I mean, just the thought that for Alex Golish, right? Like, this is what he's stepping into. I mean, if he can, like Jason was saying, if he can retain the right pieces,
right?
If he can keep this thing,
it is a better situation than a lot of coaches would ever have dreamed they could have an opportunity to get.
Yeah, I want to see what it looks. I mean, some of the important decisions have been made. Some of them are still being made.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested to see the staff and the support staff that, you know, after the dust settles.
I want to see who sticks around of some of these players that we've been talking about. I mean, there are some freshmen and sophomores. Some of them have shown you more than others. But guys who you feel like could be the nucleus of an excellent college football team. And if you can get them to – and all of them, here's the good news, all of them have previously committed to Auburn. To the degree where they've
Not having to go get those from somewhere else.
It's not 8 guys who play across the world that you have to
you recruited and didn't sign in the first place.
Yes, that you missed out on, and now you have to convince to come to Auburn. It's 8 or 10 players, and there's probably more, but 8 or 10 that we've mentioned in particular.
Right. I would think there are a couple of dozen.
Sure.
Probably, I would think at least a couple of dozen. But like, man, if we can keep these guys.
But I think that we've been focusing on like the 8 to 10 most proven of those players. But you're right. There are offensive linemen who haven't gotten a chance on the field yet. There are defensive backs who haven't gotten a chance on the field yet. Auburn signed a couple of freshman receivers that you didn't see.
Yeah, no, that's right.
I mean, Sam Turner and the Smith brothers, right? I mean, there are
Duke and Eric.
Yeah, I mean, there are some other. I mean, a couple of freshman tight ends you didn't see very much of. Like there are that Omar's not the only running back. I mean, there are a bunch.
You know, Jason mentioned Darian Smith. He played a lot in the Alabama game.
Yes, he did. So I mean, it's not just the usual suspects, but that to me, I mean. And the staff has to do with it, but how much of this, and it was going to be the case no matter who was the head coach, but like how much of this he can retain and how much where you feel like you're starting over or you're having to, you're having to go fishing for new players. Like, you know, that's going to be vital over these next, 90 days or so.
Very interesting to keep an eye on. 334-321-1390. We've got calls now on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Mitch gets us started. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. I don't know about y'all, but it is wet and cold, and it's
nasty. Yes, indeed.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. I mean, and according to my wife, I didn't look at the extended forecast, but she said it's supposed to last through, like, Saturday. So, woo! Anyway, I think it was Tuesday night, maybe. How does Duke get two home games in a row.
They're Duke in the SEC ACC Challenge.
I think the answer to that is that ESPN, I mean, without knowing if there's like data on this, I think ESPN likes the visual of Cameron Indoor. I wouldn't be surprised if Auburn gets to play at home more often than some other teams in the like moving forward in the SEC ACC Challenge, just because arenas that have proven to be able to pack the place, you know, could be. I think Kentucky would probably play more often at home than some other schools in this. I mean, I get that it's in a perfect world it would be, you know, home road every year, but I think ESPN likes the idea of sending an SEC team to Cameron Indoor to be sort of that invader from a different conference, that outsider coming in to face what is always a consistently excellent crowd.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, I get the appeal of sending Duke or North Carolina to Auburn. Yeah. And I would say that I hope if Auburn does have the luck where they can be a team that gets to play because of Neville, Auburn gets to be at home more often than other ACC, you know, SEC or ACC programs in this challenge. I'd love for North Carolina to make a visit, right? Like, I think that'd be that'd be a fantastic home game. If you're not going to send Duke on the road in the SEC ACC Challenge, I would love for UNC. Louisville would also be a top notch opponent. I think Louisville could have a really big season this year, and there'd be a ton of excitement to see what Louisville could do on the road. But I'd say North Carolina as an opponent at Neville Arena would be a really special thing for next year's SEC ACC Challenge.
Yeah, I totally agree with that because I lived up there for 20 years, and my wife's a graduate from UNC, so that'd be great. They probably, I'm sure they've never played there, and I'm sure Duke's probably never played in, didn't they used to call it Alligator Alley?
Yes.
What they used to call it?
Yeah, that was what they used to call it in Gainesville.
You're talking about the OCC, right? The O'Connell Center?
Yeah. So, well, I really excited about the new head coach. And everything of high school football. I watched the Thompson Opelika game, and I think I turned it off when it was 34-0. What was the final score?
48-10.
48-10. Wow.
Sixth title in 7 years for Thompson.
Like five in a row.
Six out of seven.
I don't remember how. I don't know how many in a row, but six out of seven. So.
Wow.
Yep.
Man. Wow. I feel for Opelika. Thompson, like I said, I watched it, and Thompson just, I don't think Thompson threw a pass in the first half. I mean, they just.
They didn't have right to. No, you're right. You're right. Hey, Mitch, appreciate
right,
it, man.
Guys.
We got to roll.
War Eagle.
All right, let's get one more before we take our final break.
Brian.
And Brian is up next. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. Long time no talk. I won't go into the coaching stuff because other than to say I'm really excited, I'll call you another time for that because I know you're up against a break. But quick question for you guys. I heard that was a K-State that was turning down a bowl, and there's a possibility that we could be invited to a bowl. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think we would even entertain that? Do you think it would be a good idea? What are your all?
So we talked about it. Bill brought it up earlier in the show, Brian, and we talked about it a little bit with Jason Caldwell, and I think there are benefits.
There are. The benefits would be the coaches and players would learn what to expect from the others. While you're in this evaluation period and players are making up their minds whether or not they're going to go into the transfer portal and coaches are trying to determine who they would love to keep and want to convince to keep, it would be great to have them practice. But Jason brought up a couple of really good points. It's very difficult to expect you're going to install a completely new offense with no offensive coaches that we know of being retained. So it would be new coaches installing a new offense in 15 days. And what if you go out and that offense stinks?
Yeah.
And then
that's the
then,
part
then,
I can't
then
shake.
Would the perception be, well, it's not going to be any different, even though it's not fair.
I just wonder what kind of grace you would get for a poor performance offensively, or if it would be sort of a flat start to what is a really what should be a really exciting time these next couple of months. And also the time you'd spend getting ready for that bowl game, you know, is time you're not doing something else. Is that, you know, scouting the portal?
Yeah.
Is that recruiting? Is that re-recruiting? You know, I think that, you know, the one I think of as like, oh, that was a mistake, was Napier's first year. They were 6-6, and they went to Vegas, and it was like, I think it was the day the portal opened. And so he spent the week before the portal opening in Las Vegas with his team, and he only brought, you know, 40 or 45 players.
And because, they were terrible. They got absolutely destroyed. It's different now, though, because the portal doesn't open until the 2nd, and your signing, your early signing period is done.
I think there is value in protecting Golish's debut and saying that it's Baylor. Like, that game in Atlanta is the first time you're going to see the Alex Golish Auburn Tigers.
Well, we'll find out.
And you've got a lot of time to get ready for that. I think there's value in there.
Yeah, we'll find out, by the way, next Thursday, the full schedule of who you play when. Well, the SEC's going to announce that.
But we know the Baylor game's the opener. Yeah, we know the Baylor game's the opener, but we'll know the exact dates.
When you play.
Dates and times, next week.
That's a great question, and I'm glad Jason brought that up. Because I had thought, yeah, it's a no-brainer. You got to play it because of the opportunity to learn your players and the players learn the coaches.
Yeah, and that was, and I'll let you go, but that was you guys hit on all my thoughts too on both sides because, you know, last time when we didn't do it with Freeze, it totally made sense because, you know, because when Freeze came in, I think there was an opportunity to possibly do a bowl at that point too. But that made sense not to because he had to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one makes a little more sense. But, yeah, as Jason pointed out, were my thoughts exactly. So, anyways, good stuff, guys. Thanks.
Great hearing from you, Brian. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon, early evening. Back to wrap things up here on the Thursday Drive.
This online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final minute or so here on the Thursday Drive. Fun show today. Glad Jason Caldwell could join us here in hour number two. And, of course, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer in hour number one.
Is the coach going to be able to pop in tomorrow? I know we've called
yes,
on
indeed he is.
Called on him a lot. But he
Fridays, he always, if he can, he's always here on Friday.
And Cody wasn't on his side of the ball, but he knows Cody Burns pretty well. You know, he was Cody had an outsized influence on that locker room in 07 and 08. And Coach Don Dunn was there for that. And now to have Cody part of the staff, I think pretty exciting part of the Alex Golish era here at Auburn.
Yeah. So Coach Dunn will be in with us tomorrow. Hope you had a chance to hear both of our guests and all the callers today. If you missed any, check out the podcast.
That's right. Podcast The Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
That's going to wrap things up for the Thursday edition of The Drive. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Again, Coach Don Dunn will join us. Hope you will as well. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.